Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 227, and we're going to talk about doing van life on your terms. Who is it that says you're doing van life right? It's in fact you. We're also going to talk about the propane locker and why it's so important. And we'll have a product review of an air fryer that I've been using for a while and it works pretty well. And then we'll talk about roads that make noise that you're supposed to like. That's an interesting one. Hey folks, thanks very much for joining me here once again. Happy to have you with me. And I have been kind of pensive lately. I've been thinking about a bunch of things relating to van life and life in general. And I thought I'd take an episode here and talk about success and defining success and when you know you're on the right path and all those sort of things that a lot of people will talk about after they've smoked a big doobie around the campfire, which is not something that I have done. I'm just normally in that state. So, hey, sometimes you do things and you get criticized for them, or people are telling you you're doing them wrong. I mean, this is a common theme in van life because, I mean, I'll just give you my example. I spent months building out my NV200. I finally got it the way I wanted. I went out on my first big trip. I'm driving through New England, and I met my folks at a famous restaurant in Saugus, Massachusetts called the Kowloon. If you're familiar with that area, you know exactly where it was. And I was happy to show the van off to my folks. And my dad looked at it and said, well, that's way too claustrophobic for me, and walked away. And my mom said, aren't you embarrassed driving around in that thing? Now, this was something that I had poured every ounce of my soul into. Literal blood, sweat, and tears were in this van. It was a part of me and a part of who I was. And my mother just told me to be embarrassed by that. But I wasn't, because I'm the one who got to decide how cool it was. And I think it was pretty darn cool, and so do 450,000 people on YouTube. But that doesn't matter. All that matters in these cases is understanding that you're the one. You are the one who is making all the decisions here and is getting to decide whether what you're doing is the right thing or not. Now, obviously, I am on your side. I think you are doing the right thing. If you are interested in traveling in a vehicle and living in a vehicle, I am here to empower you as much as possible because I think it's a wonderful thing. And if you don't think it's a wonderful thing, I also think that's just fine. Although I wonder why you're listening to me. And it's funny how things have changed regarding van life. You know, back in the day, Saturday Night Live had that famous skit with Chris Farley about a van down by the river and how it was the worst thing ever. You know, that was like the bottom of life. It's like, oh, you have reached the ultimate pit. You can sink no lower than to be living in a van by the river. And you know, in Chicago's history, the Chicago River was typically used as a dumping grounds, and being near the river was a bad thing. And in fact, they built a housing project by the river that's not far from where I live, simply because that was the cheapest land they could get. Now, fast forward, what do we have? The river is where you want to be. Having a river view is actually worth a lot of money. And this project is no longer a project, of course. It is being redeveloped into expensive condos and apartments. And the same is true of van life. There's a popular meme going around that shows a nice van by a river, and it talks about that SNL sketch, and it says, you know, once a put down, now a life's goal for only $45,000. Of course, the van they show could possibly cost $145,000. That's a whole side thing. At any rate, if you are worried about what other people are going to think about you in your van life, that's something you're going to have to get over. Van life is exactly the opposite of doing what other people want you to do. It's about doing what you want to do and about defining yourself. This is a concept that I keep coming back to as I do things in my life. If you've listened to this podcast for a while, you will notice that I start a lot of things and then I change. I give up on them or I stop doing them. For example, I used to do this podcast as a video as well. You could watch it on YouTube with me live and with graphics and everything. And I've done that twice. I've gone through that process twice and I've stopped both times because I wasn't being successful in my measurement of success for those things. Now you get to choose what that success is. For me, I wanted to have enough people watching those that it was worth my time to do them. Because, let's face it, I can do the podcast in a few hours. To do the video version takes me an entire day, at least. And I was never really sure the quality was where I wanted it to be. And so I gave myself a time period. I'm going to do this for 10 episodes, and if I don't have enough numbers, then I'll stop doing it, and that's exactly what I did. I got to define success. I didn't reach success. I changed what I was doing. And I've done that a few times. Another is with Antarctica. Now, I went to Antarctica. That was a complete success. I had the trip. That was all great. But all the social media aspect of it was a complete failure. Not only did somebody steal my iPad, which had a lot of the footage I was going to use on it, I couldn't do anything while I was down there because the internet was so poor. And I had only brought my iPad, which had all the content, and it wouldn't connect properly with the shipboard internet, and so on and so forth. But the interesting thing was, when I started writing out my log of what I was doing every day, and I started actually doing that as a podcast that I've now taken down, I found that I was going into such a level of detail that the only person who would ever be interested in that was me. And, well, I don't need to do a podcast just for me. I've got it all in my head. And I had to recalibrate. So, in another example, I was not being successful at what I was doing, and so I stopped. And I'm sad about that. I really wish I had done a successful thing with Antarctica. But there's a silver lining, which I'll get to at the end of this rant. Another thing is the Aurora Project, which I talked about a lot in the early days. I visited every place named Aurora in Canada and the United States. Not once, but twice, at least for most of them. And some of them more than twice, some of them three and four times. There's 20-something of them. And I had this grand scheme where I was going to go to everyone and make a video for everyone. And my original goal was to do this in a divided America and show our commonality. There's nothing in common with any of these auroras other than that they're named Aurora. They're in all parts of the country, north, south, east, west. Some are big, some are small, some are fairly new, some have been around for hundreds of years. But I was convinced that I would find a commonality between them all. And I did. But it wasn't the one I expected to find. It wasn't something that defined us all as Americans. The only common element I found was that each one, and this isn't universally true, but generally each one was united in that they found an other to hate. There's a lot more to say about that, but that put me in this position where I didn't know how to finish and do the project. And I tried to do the best I could. I decided I'm going to put a positive spin on all these, and I made a few Aurora videos. And again, nobody was watching them. They didn't really accomplish my original goal. Each of those took me about a week. They were brutal. And so I've decided not to do that. So again, I had a condition for success. I didn't meet it. I stopped what I was doing. More recently, I took a mystery trip. I decided that I was going to go on a trip and not tell anybody where I was going and kind of make a game out of it. I called it Where is Jeff? Not very creative. And I started with an airport and I went to another airport and then I went to another country and I went to a bunch of places in that country and made 1-minute videos of me every day in that country, or at every stop anyway, and asked people to figure out where I was. And I did exactly what I wanted to do. The videos came out just like I wanted. I was able to do them almost in real time, and I had a few engaged people who were actively trying to guess where I was. And holy cow, these people were amazing. From the tiniest clues in these images, they were able to figure out exactly where I was. That was a complete success. That project was great. I might do it again, I might not, I don't know. But very, very few people engaged in that. The difference between that and the other things I did is that I redefined what success was. Success for that project for me was to complete it, have the quality be where I wanted, and to actually get a few people engaged enough in it to complete the challenges. And I did that. I posted them on TikTok and Instagram and YouTube and Facebook. Facebook had by far the largest engagement. I could get hundreds of views on there. TikTok, 2 views or so. And so I learned something from it too. But the point is that I didn't define success on viewership, which means I didn't define success on what other people thought. That wasn't what I was trying to do. I was doing something for me, and I did that. And that is very much like van life. Now, what's the silver lining of these projects I did that I didn't consider a success? Well, I get to do them again. For example, if I go back to Antarctica now, I can treat that first trip as a scouting mission. And if I decide to make a video series about my trip to Antarctica, I'll know much better how to do that. Or I will know what I want to do before I get there. What is the theme of this trip? Is it going to be exploration? Is it going to be desolation? Is it going to be climate change? Is it going to be a lack of people? Is it going to be wildlife? Whatever. I will now know enough to actually define decent terms of success. That's the silver lining. I am going to do something with the auroras. It's a very difficult nut to crack for me, even though it's been years since I started it. It's 5 years now since I started that project. I'm still going to finish it in some form. I will find a success in the Aurora project, other than just actually having been to all the auroras. I've got lots of stories to tell and lots of observations, and I have to find a way to share them. I just haven't figured it out yet. So sometimes success is delayed. You haven't actually failed. You're just in progress. I have to thank Adam Savage for some of this way of thinking. At one of the amazing meetings that we used to hold in Vegas every year, Adam Savage did a 45-minute presentation on everything he failed at. Now, we tend to think of Adam Savage as a high-success individual. He's got an incredibly successful YouTube series now. He was on Mythbusters. He did a lot of the props for the Star Wars movies. He was even with Mr. Whipple in the Mr. Whipple Charmin commercials of years back. The guy is a highly productive, highly successful man. So we don't think of him as a failure, but he does, at least sometimes. And he was humble enough to share some of those moments with us and show us how much effort he put into these things and how they didn't turn out the way he wanted and how he was able to recover from that and go on and do more things. And that's how it is with van life. How are you a success at van life? Are you defined by your failures? Oh boy, I really wanted to go to the Grand Canyon, but I got there and all the campgrounds were full and I couldn't find any place to park. And then when I did find a place to park, the cops kicked me out and I never got to see even the darn canyon. And what a failure. Okay, maybe. But maybe you define success as getting a story out of the trip. You certainly did that. Maybe you define success as actually having the vehicle work properly after you put all that time building it. That could be your success. You get to decide all this stuff. You can accuse me of being a relativist or whatever you'd like. I don't care because you don't get to define my success. I do. And I hope those of you who need to hear that message will take it to heart. Thank you to Kent, Todd, just in Chicago, and someone whose name is Steve. Thank you guys very much for buying me gallons of diesel at buymeacoffee.com/built2go. You guys are the reason there are no ads in this podcast and haven't been any ads in this podcast for quite a while now. Thank you. I absolutely appreciate the support, and I especially appreciate the support of those of you who are monthly members. If you'd like to help support the show and keep the ads away, please visit buymeacoffee.com/built2go. 2 T's, not 3, not 1. I appreciate it, and so do the rest of us. Van Life News. Oh, kind of grim news this week. You know, it's kind of hard to find good van life stories all the time because, well, they're not making new vans. That would be a nice one. But I do have three stories here. All of them are kind of important. First one is there was a big van explosion in Memphis, Tennessee. A woman got up in the morning and tried to light her stove, and her van literally exploded and blew her through the metal door that was shut. Body went through the slider and landed outside. Now, she's okay-ish. I mean, she's alive. She has a lot of hospital time ahead of her, but she's probably going to be okay. So what happened? Well, one of the concerns I have with the news is that they don't actually report what happened. They just tell you that as though that's what happened. But me being somebody who builds out vans, I want to know what went wrong. All we know is that her van, basically, it filled up with propane such that when she created a spark, the propane exploded. Okay, so what can we say about that? Well, I'll be talking about a propane locker in the Tech Talk part, which would help from that. But yeah, folks, ventilation is super important. If you smell propane, act on it. If you have a propane detector, make sure it's in good working order. Those things expire. They're a great thing to have. Oh, they're also called explosive gas detectors. And I'll have a link in the show notes if you want to look more. It's worth looking at because the picture of the van, it's pretty impressive. This wasn't an explosion with a lot of fire. It was just a lot of force. And yeah, actually blew somebody through the sliding door. And that's pretty amazing. Our second news story here is just kind of an update. As you may have heard, Chevy, GM, is both of them, I'm the same company really, are getting rid of the Express and Savannah vans. The last American van, as it said. They're going away this year or next year. And Chevy has said, well, we've got a replacement in the works. Apparently, they do and they don't. The replacement they've announced is BrightDrop. Now, BrightDrop has been around for a while. This is a company that makes electric vans for delivery and such. And I've seen a few FedEx vans that are BrightDrop. They're not as ubiquitous as the Rivian vans that Amazon's using. But now, BrightDrop is going to be Chevy. The vans they make are going to be Chevy vans, and they're nice vans. I haven't seen anyone turn one into a camper yet, but they get 272 miles, which isn't terrible range, and they've got a huge interior with very flat walls. I could totally see one of these things being made into a camper. And then they drop the other shoe. These will only be for fleet sales. So until some fleet wears one out and sells them used, you're not going to be able to get your hands on a BrightDrop van. Why can't we get good vans in the... I know why we can't get good vans in the S, and I will not be ranting about the chicken tax again, but boy, I really want to. And our third story is an echo of the first story, but it's a bit different. A diesel heater, the kind we're always talking about and how we think they're wonderful, is being blamed for burning down a trailer that a family was living in Australia. The story is that this family, because of economic situations, had moved into a travel trailer, you know, a normal kind of camping trailer. They call them caravans in Australia and many other countries. And by sheer luck, none of them were in the trailer when it caught fire and burned down to the frame. There's nothing left. And an investigation showed that the diesel heater was to blame. Now again, I want to know why. Was there diesel leaking on something hot? Was it improperly installed? Was there an electrical fault that had to do with the heater and it was actually electricity that caused the thing? I don't know. We're never going to find this stuff out because the media doesn't report in that depth. But, and I promise I'm not going to spend every week talking about every van that's burned down, because I could. There are that many. I just want to show that this is not just a U.S. phenomenon, and it's not always to blame on propane. Anything that is electrical or burns things or produces heat can cause a fire. So you have to be very careful. Make sure you use fuses. Make sure you think about, okay, what if the diesel leaks? Where's it going to go? And make sure you have your propane in a locker. Which leads us to Tech Talk. Propane lockers are a very, very good thing. In my ambulance, I turned one of the cabinets into a propane locker. All a propane locker is, and it's called a locker because every cabinet on a boat is called a locker. You don't have to lock them. In fact, you shouldn't for safety reasons. It's a cabinet, and you put your propane tank in there. Now, I have a normal kind of 20-pound propane tank, the kind you would find on a gas grill. in my ambulance, in the Sprinter van, and it's in the cabinet, and I put a seal around the door, and the most important part is I put a drain in the floor. Propane is heavier than air. Every tank has at least two places it can leak from. There's the valve that you attach to things that you can open, but there's also the relief valve. If your propane tank is overfilled because somebody didn't know what they were doing, which has happened to me recently, or it gets too hot, the safety valve will let go, and you can easily fill your van with explosive gas, which is not a good thing. That vent in the floor prevents that. If for some reason, I don't know how this could happen, but if for some reason my propane tank started leaking, it would flow under the van and out of the inside of the van. And while that's not the safest thing either, the danger of propane gas, other than asphyxiation, is that it's going to be an enclosed area and explode. If you have a propane leak outdoors, it's not great, but it's not going to explode. In fact, if you shoot a propane tank, it just makes a hole in the propane tank and propane leaks out. It doesn't actually cause an explosion, despite every video game and movie you've ever seen. So, if you are going to use propane, I recommend you have a propane locker of some sort. It does require you to drill a hole in the bottom of your van to create a drain, and it should be 1 inch in diameter is the recommended size. And then you want it to be airtight as much as possible. But okay, let's just say you use a little butane cans, or you use the little green bottles that I hate so much that are very, very common. What do you do for those? Well, yeah, you should have a locker for them too. Ideally, it will be as I've described, but if not, put them in anything that's enclosed such that if they start leaking, it won't fill your van with gas. And last thing, do not refill non-refillable containers. I know a lot of people like to refill those 1 pound green cans with the cheap things you can get on Amazon, but it's not safe, it's not legal, and it has killed people. It's very controversial. All I can say is those are the facts. Product review. I have become a real air fryer proponent lately. You know, I'm a big microwave guy. I like the microwave. I know a lot of people hate it. That's fine. You get to cook any way. You can define success in your cooking any way you want. Currently, I'm defining success in my cooking with an air fryer. I like the crispiness it adds, and it makes certain foods taste better than the microwave does. Going to cook soup? Microwave. Perfect. Going to cook fried chicken or reheat a pizza? The air fryer is great. But what about using one in your van? Well, you absolutely can if you have enough power. And I found one that I have been using in the Airstream every week that seems like a good candidate for van life. So this is the Bella 2-quart air fryer. And the reason I like this one over a lot of the others is that it's dead simple. No electronics. You don't have to set the temperature. In fact, you can't set the temperature. It's one temperature. And all it has is a timer dial. That's it. You turn the timer to the time you want. It cooks for that amount of time. And then, ding, it's done. Now, this is not going to let you do anything subtle. I have a fancier one at home that you can set the temperature and the time. It has a shake alarm. Like, if you're cooking fries, you're supposed to shake them at a certain... I don't want any of that in the van. I want simplicity. All this thing is a giant hair dryer in a bucket. I mean, that's basically what an air fryer is, and that's what I want. So the trick with it is it uses a lot of power. It uses 1,200 watts, which is 10 amps at 110 volts, or whatever your mains is. If you're doing 220, it's 5 amps. You understand that I'm talking mostly US-centric here, and if you're still listening, you understand you have to do the conversions. I apologize. If you're going to run this on 12 volts, it's going to be 1,500 watts because you're going to have an inverter loss, and then you're going to need a big enough inverter. Now, there's not much of a surge with these, but I think the very least you could get away with is a 2,000-watt inverter. And then you're using a lot of amps there. You could be using 100 amps to power this thing. 100 amps for an hour is 100 amp hours. That could totally drain your 100 amp hour battery if that's what you have. So you have to be judicious in how you use it. But in my experience, you don't have to run it that long. 5 minutes is enough for most of the things I do. And I have these little frozen pizzas that I get from Costco. They just happen to be very good, in my opinion. And you can do those in 6 minutes with this thing. And you get an actual nice crispy pizza out of it instead of the soggy thing you get out of the microwave. So it's all about the power. If you've got the power, if you're already cooking with an induction cooktop, for example, you can handle an air fryer. So this one is only $39. It's fairly cheap. It's very simple. They're a little bulky, unfortunately. Their shape isn't conducive to putting them away, but it's easy to clean. You can just wipe it out with a paper towel. And heck, I use it every weekend. So if that's the kind of thing you're looking for, have a look at this one. Again, it's the Bella 2-quart manual air fryer oven and 5-in-1 multi-cooker with removable non-stick and dishwasher-safe crisping tray and basket. 1200-watt heating system, matte black. Link in the show notes. Tales from the road. So I have a friend named Clem. Clem Snide is his full name. And Clem and I met in Horse Cave, Kentucky, when I found him just hanging out outside, and he was looking for a ride, and I had an empty seat, and I let him ride along. And we have ridden all over the country together. Clem is a good friend. He's an old guy. He's kind of cantankerous. He says profane things from time to time, and he's also not human. And I don't mean that in the bad way. I'm just saying that he's kind of a dummy. Because he's made of stuffed cloth, and he's got a rubber mask, and he has plastic hands, and he's wearing my old clothes and sunglasses. And, well, I don't know why. I just decided that when I was driving around the country in my smart car, I had a passenger seat that was empty, and I wanted to fill it with something. So I filled it with Clem, and I made up this elaborate backstory for him, and he has his own Facebook page, and I don't know. Clem and I got along really well. And I found that if I went to a fast food place and had a drink, his lap made a great drink and hamburger holder. And he was just a good guy. Now, I did drive to a place, I believe it was in Alabama. And I stopped at a fast food place and went in because I didn't have a drive-thru. And I parked right in front. So the big windows in the fast food place, you could see the smart car. And as I ordered, having been with Clem for days now, I kind of forget he's there. The person who gave me the food said, is your friend okay? I was like, what do you mean? He's like, well, he doesn't look very good. And then I turned around so I could see what she was seeing. And, well, yeah, there was Clem sitting in the passenger seat, kind of looking a little wan, not moving a lot. And she could see him, too. And I was like, what do I do with this? Do I just say, oh, no, he's not real? Or do I just say, oh, no, he's just resting? And so I decided to say, oh, no, it's not a real person. It's just a dummy. And she looked at me like, oh, okay, gave me my food. And then about 10 seconds after I left the restaurant, she followed me out. Because she didn't believe me. Because she had to make a choice in her head. Which is more plausible? That there's somebody sitting in that car who might need help because they look like they're sick, and I'm making up a story, or the truth, which was the story, which was that I'm riding around with a dummy in the car. Yeah, she chose the former, and she followed me out to have a closer look. And at that point, I was like, all right, I'm going to play with this. So I waved at her, and I kind of picked up Clem's hand and held it up over the dashboard and also waved at her. And she kind of jumped back a little bit and had the shocked look. And then I drove off and, well, I maybe was a little mean, but it was fun and it entertained me. And at that moment, that was my success. Anyway, fast forward a bit. I'm looking for a van to buy because the smart car is not the ideal vehicle for a 6-foot-tall person to do van life in. And I found an NV200 of legend at this point and went to go see it. And I'm at the lot with the NV200. I park the smart car on the side of the road, go test drive the NV200 and poke around with it, and everything's fine. I didn't take the vehicle home then. I went back to the smart car, hopped in the driver's seat, started it, and a cruiser, police cruiser, cuts in front of me so I can't leave. And the guy's in the driver's seat. He rolls down the passenger window and says, "Hey, you doing okay?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm fine." He said, "I got a call that there's somebody non-responsive in a smart car." And I'm like, "Well, I have just got in the car." And I was like, "Oh. And, do you mean this next to me?" He's like, "Yeah, what's up with him?" Like, well, he's not real. He's like, "What do you mean he's not real?" I was like, no, wait. So I picked up Clem's arm, which is kind of in this army jacket, and held it up for the officer and said, "No, see, he's not real." And I took his hand and bent it in a very non-human shape, that if he had any bones in there at all, it would never bend like this. And the cop looks at me and says, in classic fashion, "Shit," and then speeds off. And it was at that moment that I was like, oh no, I can't ride around with Clem anymore, because if people are actually going to call the cops on him, well, I can't have that. I can't have the waste of civic resources or the potential problems this could cause if I had exactly the wrong cop. So yeah, as I'm sitting here, Clem is actually in a garbage bag in my closet about 8 feet away. But it makes me sad. I really liked traveling with Clem. I want him to come out again. And I was going to take him on all my trips. All these trips I do with all the people, I was going to have Clem come with us. But unfortunately, several of the people who go on these trips regularly found Clem so creepy that they refused to come on the trips. So I don't know what I'm going to do with Clem. Maybe I'll have him move into the Tiki Bago or the Scamp or something. Or maybe just in the woods down in Tiki Bago Land. I don't know. But I think Clem needs to come outside for a bit. A place to visit. You may have heard of these places, and you may not have, but they are musical roads. You know how when you're driving down the highway, you can often hear a hum? And then sometimes when you're going over strips, you kind of get a rhythm and maybe different notes depending on what the pavement's like. Well, long time ago now, somebody thought, why don't we have the vehicles sing to us? And the first one of these I know of was actually in Walt Disney World in Florida. When it first opened, there was a road you could drive down that played, I think, Zippity-Doo-Dah, but it may have been When You Wish Upon a Star. I don't remember. That road is long gone now. It was by the airport that is also long gone. There used to be an airport in Walt Disney World for private planes. But that idea persisted, and then Honda created a commercial where a Honda drove down the road and played that part of the William Tell overture that you know, the theme song from The Lone Ranger. And basically, all you had to do was drive down the road at this certain speed, and it would go that with the tires of your car. It's kind of a cute little thing. Unfortunately, it caused problems, and that is no longer there either. Except that Honda, they liked this so much that they actually moved it. And it is still something you can do. You can drive down this road in Lancaster, California, and hear the William Tell Overture. It's called the Civic Musical Road, and it's on Avenue G in Lancaster, California. I have a link in the show notes so you can find it. And it works. And this is the new one. They built this one after people near the old one complained about the noise. Because imagine living near this thing and having to hear that randomly all day and night long. That could get old. So they went to Avenue G, rebuilt it, and it's farther away, so it's not bothering anybody. Now, the trick is you have to go 55 miles an hour or it's not right. And fortunately, that is the speed limit on this road. Unfortunately, it's out of tune. The guys who were installing it didn't follow the directions properly, so instead of it's like something like that. Still kind of cool, but really not what you were promised. Now, there's a few of these other singing roads, but there's one that's really not far from this one, so you can get two for the price of one, and this one is in perfect tune, and it is the R. Lee Ermey Musical Road. Now, R. Lee Ermey is a guy that you have probably heard of, even if you don't know his name. He was the drill sergeant in Full Metal Jacket, and he became the icon for all drill sergeants in the world. And he doesn't have a song associated with him, except He was a Marine. And so what this is a 30-second bit of the Marine's hymn that you can hear while you're driving down the road. And this one is done differently and also perfectly. It is a groove on the side of the road, and it's not the entire road, so you don't have to listen to it. If you want to, you can move a little to the right and have your right wheels go down the grooves, but if you don't want to, you can just drive on the left and not have to deal with it, because it's 30 seconds long. Not everyone might be into this. It's clearly labeled. It actually has paint of musical notes on it, so, you know, it's obvious what it is. And according to reports, it actually sounds like the Marine's hymn, and it's completely in tune. Again, you have to do 55 miles an hour, and the tip is that it will sound better if you roll down the passenger side windows. So if you happen to be in that part of California, after you're done in Lancaster, head over to Palmdale, which isn't that far away, and you can do this. It's on Avenue N, as in Nancy, and I will have a link in the show notes with the coordinates and stuff, so you can definitely find it. Both of these are on Atlas Obscura. You can read about their history and what they're going to do. And yes, there's some of these all over the world. This is not that unique of a concept, but it's kind of a fun one, and it's a rare spot where you can get two for one. Resource recommendation. So we've talked about recycling on this podcast a few times and how personally I don't feel like it's that big of a deal when you're in your van because your impact is so low and the impact of you driving to find recycling is actually higher than you not doing the recycling to begin with. That aside, if you decide that you want to recycle and you're in a van and you don't know where the recycling center is, you might have guessed, there is actually a website for that. Now, this is in the U.S. There's others in other countries. But this one, I tested and it works pretty well. It's called search.earth911.com. And when you go to that site, there's just a basic search box. You type in what you want to recycle, your zip code, and it will tell you all the places nearby that recycle exactly what you want to recycle. And so, you know, if you're trying to recycle cardboard, I don't know. That to me just doesn't seem like it's worth it if you're in your van. Where this is going to be used by me is if I'm trying to recycle e-waste. E-waste is tough. You know, if your camera breaks, you're not supposed to just throw it in the trash. You're supposed to take it to a special place for recycling. In Chicago, I take it to Micro Center. They have a great e-waste program. But if I'm on the road, I don't know where to put that stuff. It's not like you can go to a rest area and find an e-waste disposal site. But with this, you can find one. And that might be worth driving a bit for. But better than that, you can find one on your route, so you don't have to do any special driving. If you know you're going to be driving from Kansas City to Des Moines, you can look at your route and see, okay, where are the cities here? Find their zip codes, type them in, and you might find something right on your way. Doesn't cost you any extra fuel, and you get to recycle things properly. And feel good about that, too. So, if recycling is a major concern of yours, or you have something unusual that you want to recycle, like, you know, used motor oil, for example, that's something we might run into, or a used battery, check out search.earth911.com, and it might give you exactly what you're looking for. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 227. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. I am about to leave the country and go on another trip, so I don't know what next week's podcast is going to look like, but it could be something interesting, so tune in next Wednesday for that. If you'd like to get a hold of me, you can find me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's two T's, not three, not one. And until next time, remember the words of Winston Churchill, who said, "Success consists of going from failure to failure without loss of enthusiasm."